Okay, this is the last bit of tape I have with Steve Brush, and it's going to be about 10 minutes. And I just wanted to ask you, Steve, about your memories of the protests on the doorsteps, attempts to stop evictions at Leighton Leightonstone.
Yes, thinking about it again, it's different things come into my mind. It's probably the earliest I got up during those years. They usually took place around 7, maybe 6:30. So I do remember cold, misty winter mornings especially. But it does fall into a kind of blur. The ones I remember most are the ones, not actually of houses, but of the sorting office in Philibrook Road, which got knocked down. Perhaps I was at those most because it was just 100 yards from my doorstep. There were so many, I'm sure. Everyone just did a proportion of them. I'm sure some people did more than me. I took some photographs. I think they're long gone now. Of the demonstrations, they are spectacularly uninteresting, unlike my paintings of demonstrations in Wapping, which were kind of distilled from memories and therefore over-dramatised or melodramatised. So every figure was involved in some sort of acrobatic action of protest or aggression. The photographs of the Philibrook Road demonstrations seem to be terrible in their mundanity, in a sense, just people standing around looking cold and bored, waiting for perhaps the bailiffs to come or the diggers to come, and you'd wait for about an hour, they'd come, see the protest, go away, and then you'd go home. And that's kind of my memory of it. It used to be just, and especially at that time in the morning, some people just didn't like talking. There would be kind of various grunts of acknowledgement to each other and then standing around. Yeah, breakfasts tasted nice after demonstrations. I remember that. Some people went and got bacon sandwiches, but I was always more mean than that. And I used to buy these reduced for quick sale bacon bits from the local supermarket, which I used to cook up after demonstrations. So kind of the general impression of the demonstrations was that. And as for specifics of a particular demonstration, to be honest, nothing stands out.
With the post office, can you give us an idea of how many people were there?
Yeah, and I think this would probably be about an average of about 15 or 20. I think that was seen as enough. Then just needs to be a kind of witness presence. Sometimes there were token protests, things would happen, but we'd just be witnesses to it. More so with houses and with bailiffs coming to evict people. If we were there, then it was more than a protest because it actually discouraged the bailiffs from action. So it was, you know, a successful action rather than a token protest. But I think with most of them, apart from the large demonstrations, you know, elsewhere, there used to be about 15, 20.
So could you describe, say, with the post office, what would happen? Presumably the protesters would get there first.
Indeed, yes. Yeah, I mean, if we didn't, then it can be a complete failure. Again, my memory is hazy. It seems that, you know, the actual outcome of anything and the reason for going there specifically on any day is just lost in memory. So I just get this almost routine memory of it must have happened a number of times. So I remember the routine rather than the specifics of it. And nothing really stands out as, you know, an event that happened at this particular protest.
So at the post office, would people come with little banners and things like that, or would they shout or chant anything, or how would it all be organised?
Yeah, it
What
would.
would be the order in which things happened?
Well, people would turn up first of all, and they would turn up in dribs and drabs. As I say, if there was any shouting, it would just be a brief few minutes in, an hour's waiting probably. And those few minutes would be towards the end of the wait, because once the thing had happened or the people had been turned away, then there would be no point really in staying on. Thinking about it more, I think the protests against the shutting of the sorting office were in support of the postal workers who were also there, and I think there was a picket involved, and we wanted to, be seen to support those postal workers in their protest, which was very similar to ours. They were about to lose their jobs in the same way, and in a similar way that we were about to lose our homes and studios and jobs. So it's not a job, but a place of work, shall we say, anyway. So they would probably be there first, and then we would join them. I can't remember whether there any postal workers were actually working at the time, and the picket line was to discourage scab labour. Again, that's lost in the memory of time, I'm afraid. Mists of time, whatever.
So, when the people would come to shut down the post office, would it be just a small group of people would come
Sorry.
and... Okay.
Yeah.
So, let's go back to, say, some of the houses.
Yeah.
What memories do you have of those? Like, for example, if it was an Acme house, like Sheila Whittaker's friend in Colville Road, would you'll get phone calls and so forth to inform you that this was happening, or did you see them in the artist in the pub and then tell you and
It would be a mixture of things. There was a telephone tree for sure. But often there would be no need for that because people would go to the pub and information would be passed around there. I suppose the telephone tree worked as a default to people who hadn't gone to the pub that week or that night. Yeah, so those were really the two methods by which people were informed. I suppose people went from house to house sometimes if they knew their neighbours were actively involved. Yeah.
And I suppose it would be slightly different with Acme because I think probably a lot of the artists went quite willingly because our situation was quite different. Like we knew it was short life and so forth. Whereas more of the long-term residents, obviously they're in a very different situation.
Yeah, I mean that's n that
Or
may
what do you, what, how do you?
that may be the case, but that's not my memory. I think
Okay.
I think there was a difference between the protesting against attempted eviction of squatters who'd occupied houses perhaps that other housing associations had let fall empty. And there was certainly a lot of Acme artists involved with that. I think Acme perhaps were the Acme tenants, lessees, whatever, were the last to leave the properties, or they left later than occupants of other housing associations. So there was a sense that by the time some of them were asked to leave, then the fight had been lost anyway, so the protest was less. I suppose in any campaign like this, there's a turning point where people think, well, so much has happened now that, there's no way that we're going to win anything more. What has been won in terms of publicity and raising the agenda against road building has been done. And I always look back on it, and I used to have debates with friends, and they used to think, oh, it's just been a disaster, we've lost it, it's all been a waste of time. But I think I think a lot of people feel, myself including, that we influence the road building agenda to a good degree through the protests. We slowed down the building of the M11 Link Road. It's there now, people use it, but I think that led to a rethink of road building, which it seemed at the time, certainly in the 80s and 90s, that, you know, the governments wanted to flood the country with new roads. And this and the other protests, especially the Newbury bypass protest, you know, did, I think, force a rethink of that agenda. I mean, we're still getting roads being built, but that just seemed to be such an amount of it at that time, and that, you know, and the activities such as ours, you know, engaged with it in protest against it.
And do you think that was because as well there were sort of people like local MPs involved as well, and people sort of who were MPs and local residents as well? Do you think that carried a force?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this comes back to the issue that a number of the protests were led, and certainly the protests in Leytonstone towards the end of the period that we're talking about, were led by people who were squatting and were not locals and would move from place to place. And, you know, I think they did a very good job as well. The protest did start, though, with local residents, if we could call ourselves local residents. And you know, the good MPs, such as Harry Cohen, recognised the strength of feeling and supported it. It certainly wasn't the case that they led the campaign and we followed.
No.
And they were active in it, but that they were recognising the strength of feeling.
Mm. And also the importance, really, of the protesters who came down from Twyford. Do you know how that happened? Because there were some rumours as well that Sheila on Colville Road and Richard Latham actually called them up.
Right.
But maybe it was just part of... I mean, Sheila Whittaker did say something about there were links with Archway and the road campaign up there, and then connections with other campaign groups around that time. But have you got any recollection of...
No, I mean, I think perhaps Sheila was more involved in some of the activities I don't know anyway. Mm. I don't know whether that's true or not.
And have you got any other memories of the house evictions? Like, you mentioned a family in your street that had... you felt were like the last to go.
Mm.
Was you around when they got evicted?
No, I was gone by then.
Yeah. So when did you leave again?
Well, I left Philly Brook Road for Grove Green Road in 90... can't remember what I said last time.
Yeah.
But it seemed like something like 2002, and then was in Grove Green Road for 2 years, so I would have left there, you know, 94, 95, something like that.